Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
Anytime week one, it's always huge to be able to start off on the right foot, but let alone it's AFC North football against the Bengals.
This is Saverin on Steelers.
Hello to everyone in Steeler Nation. Welcome to Saverin on Steelers podcast. I'm Stan Saverin, weekday host on ESPN Pittsburgh from noon until 2, 970 a.m. or on your iHeart Media app. And also, beginning Sunday, the co-host on the Steelers postgame show on the Steelers Radio Network alongside former Steeler quarterback Charlie Batch. Join us each and every postgame show following Steelers games beginning this Sunday in Cincinnati. Glad you found us on the podcast. If you enjoy what you hear, please tell your friends, as we've just started a couple of weeks ago and looking forward to doing this all season long. Game one against the Cincinnati Bengals. You're going against the division champion from last year and a Super Bowl participant and a team that came a couple of plays away from actually being a Super Bowl champion. Been a while for the AFC North. Looks to be a very competitive division. The Bengals, I wonder how real they are. I'm not going to take away from anything they accomplished last year. I don't think you can do that in all fairness. They got hot at the right time. They beat some really good teams along the way. And as I mentioned earlier, they came really within a play or two of winning a Super Bowl. It's interesting about the Bengals. They've been there three times, and each and every time, they've been very, very close to winning. First two times against the 49ers, and last year against the Rams. Maybe it's just those West Coast teams that give them trouble. The Bengals, however, it should also be mentioned, and this is a new year. They've made some additions. We're going to hear about that in just a little bit from Dave Lapham. Dave is a former guard for the Bengals. He was a very good player. He's been on the Bengals radio network as their color analyst for a number of years, and we'll hear from him in just a few minutes. But the Bengals, when you look at them, big surprise, going from worst to first in the division. And it continues to underscore what's been a trend in the NFL. 17 of the last 19 years, one team has gone from being last in the division the previous year to first the following season. The Bengals did that from 2020-2021. But let's keep things in perspective. Clearly, they're a team on the rise, team that you have to take very seriously now, which may, by the way, come back to bite them. But the Bengals, despite all that, I say only, but we're only 10-7. If things go differently, and I know every team has a list of laments that they can outline, the Steelers finished a half game behind them. And nobody was terribly impressed at 9-7-1, yet here were the Bengals 10-7. Now, to be honest and forthright, the Bengals did rest everybody of significance the last regular season game because they had everything wrapped up. It didn't help them to win the game. They rested all the regulars, most of them anyway, and ended up losing that game. But still, they were 10-7. It's not like they were a powerhouse like you might consider Buffalo. And by the way, who wouldn't after seeing what they did to the Rams in the season opener or the Chiefs? Generally, the two teams regard as the best in the AFC. Time will tell. But the Bengals are an up-and-coming team. But let's keep in perspective, they were only 10-7. Now, that doesn't matter anymore. But it does matter in this regard, in two areas, I believe. Number one, and I alluded to it earlier, nobody's going to fall asleep in preparing for the Bengals. Now, the preparation for every team every week is the same. It's intense. It takes a great deal of time, and a lot of effort is put into it. But on game day, just sometimes players are human beings. They look at what used to be the Bengals, a doormat, a four-win team from a couple years ago. And there's just that little edge that isn't there as opposed to preparing for a team you know is going to be a tough one. That won't happen for Cincinnati anymore. Teams are on the lookout. Number two, although the Bengals fared very well against playoff teams last year, 7-3 record, they played a last-place schedule. Having finished last in the division in 2020, they were given a first-place schedule. A last-place schedule for 2021. They finished last in the division in 2020, so therefore they play a last-place schedule. Well, as a division winner, this year they'll be playing a first-place schedule. It does matter. Last year, the Steelers played a first-place schedule. And I don't know if the outcomes would have been any different, but they had a very difficult schedule. Some of that is random because a lot of it is based on what NFC division are you going to play. That is part of the element of it as well. Although, frankly, the Steelers playing last year played the NFC North, and outside of Green Bay, there's not much there. Yet they still managed to lose to the Minnesota Vikings, and what really killed them, tied the Detroit Lions. I know if. But had they beaten the Lions, as they should have, instead of that tie, they would have been 10-7 and tied for the division lead. Tiebreakers would have come into play, but also, being fair about it, if the division was at stake, the Bengals wouldn't have rested everybody in the last week of the season. So that's last year. But I do think it will come into play for Cincinnati this year. Much of the talk leading up, at least from the Pittsburgh end, is how upset the Steelers were, some of them, over Tyler Boyd's comments. After the first game, which the Bengals won at what was then known as Heinz Field, 24-10 the final, Tyler Boyd, Pittsburgh born and raised, played at Pitt, has become a terrific third wide receiver and a good guy. I've had the opportunity to interview Tyler on a number of occasions. He's a really good young man. But he said it looked like the Steelers quit at the end of that game. I don't know if quit is a word you don't use with professional athletes because they take offense, as they should. But the Steelers say now that they were really upset by that. I remember heading into game two when that was brought up. Several players said, oh, that doesn't matter. It's not a factor. Well, now suddenly, apparently, it is, at least for some. My only question about that would be, if you were so upset about what Boyd said after the first game against Cincinnati, why weren't you mad enough to do something about it in the second game in which the Steelers were humiliated 41-10. Did it take him 6 months of an offseason to get upset about that? I guess what I'm saying is, if you were so upset about what Boyd said after game one in the matchup from 2021, why didn't that have any effect in game two? Now all of a sudden, after dwelling on it, you're mad? If the Steelers have anything to be mad about, it's the way they played against the Bengals. Certainly in game two, they were barely competitive. 41-10, what more can you possibly say? I realize that journalists such as myself, fans out there, we don't react the same way that players do. And I long learned a long time ago that what may seem silly to at least me about bulletin board material and all that stuff, I would always say, well, you're mad about that? What are you mad about? But players do take that. For example, when T.J. Houshmandzadeh and others cleaned the mud off their cleats with a terrible towel, Steeler players were up in arms, and I said, isn't that silly? But to them, it was very real, and it served as motivation. So I don't dismiss that. I just wonder about the timing of it all. The Bengals had a really unusual preseason camp in that Joe Burrow had an emergency appendectomy. Jesse Bates, their Pro Bowl safety, held out. He had a contract issue. Eventually signed for the franchise tag salary. Arguably the two most important people on either side of the ball.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Dave Lapham joins us now. Dave, as I mentioned earlier, an outstanding guard in his playing career with the Bengals, and for any number of years now, he's been the color analyst on the Bengals radio network. Dave, it's a pleasure to have you join us. And I'm wondering, after so many years of, shall we say, disappointing seasons in Cincinnati, now they're coming back from having played in the Super Bowl. And I'm just wondering, either at the beginning of training camp or even earlier, OTAs, those kinds of things, did you sense there was a different air about these Bengals, who start the year as defending AFC champions?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the two seasons before the Super Bowl run last year, they were 6-25-1. That's the lowest winning percentage in the National Football League in 2019 and 2020. And then they just turned around in 2021. And quite honestly, Stan, middle of December, they were 7-6. They lost back-to-back home games to the Chargers by 20. And they lost in overtime to the 49ers at their stadium. So, you know, 7-4 on things Tuesday might make a playoff spot. And then 7-6, I think, well, maybe they just, you know, finish decently and build a little bit for next year. And then they caught fire. And Joe Burrow in particular caught fire. I mean, the guy just down the stretch, 11 touchdown passes, no interceptions. I mean, number one quarterback rating in the National Football League, was number one completion percentage, number one across the board. And the team followed suit, and I, you know, they came up short in the big contest. So I think their mindset right now is the unfinished business type of scenario, where, you know, came close but just didn't finish it off. And they feel like they've got a pretty good roster, a pretty good roster depth top to bottom. And honestly, I feel like with the improvements they made in their offensive line, I think they're a better football team at this time this year than they were last year. But as we know, it certainly doesn't mean that it's going to lead to, you know, the success they had last year. There's a lot of variables there. And they played their best football at the best, most opportune time and took full advantage of it. Doesn't mean they're going to do it this year.
What clicked, Dave? What happened, Middle? You're right. I mean, most people around here were disappointed in the Steelers being 9-7-1, and yet 10-7 won the division. And the Bengals clearly got hot at the right time. And records be damned, they proved it in the AFC playoffs, if not the Super Bowl as well. What clicked, as you mentioned, in mid-December?
Defense. They started playing unbelievably salty defense. And in the playoffs, they held their first two playoff opponents to under 20 points. And on an average basis, including the Super Bowl, the opposition scored just over 20 points a game. So defensively, they kept the football team in every single contest. They had 8 interceptions by 7 different players in 3 playoff games and the Super Bowl on a 4-game stretch. And they recovered a fumble as well. So they had 9 takeaways and only 2 giveaways. Mm. They went plus 7. And as we know, that's usually a winning formula. You accumulate more possessions and take some away from the opponent. You got a better chance to win football games, particularly close football games. And the Steelers last year were phenomenal in that area. They went 7-1-1 in games decided by 7 points or less. Every single playoff game last year for the Bengals was a seat warmer. You know, I mean, they're winning games by 3 points at the gun because of a takeaway, you know, tip pass interception or whatever it was at the end of playoff games. And it was just, it was remarkable the way they finished those close games. There was no question about that.
It seemed like all the turnovers came off of Ben's arm. You know, it just seemed like that in the 2 games he played against Cincinnati. Dave, there's an interesting parallel here to me in these 2 teams that will meet on Sunday, in that they spent a lot of their free agent capital on offensive linemen. 3 of the Bengals, Lyle Collins and Kappa and Karras, the Steelers with James Daniels and Mason Cole. And this is a question right up your alley. Clearly, they brought in better talent. But one of the things that has been an issue with the Steelers is cohesion. They haven't played much together. Guys get hurt. They don't want to play them because they get hurt. So even with, I know Lyle Collins was hurt for a while. Is that a concern of the Bengals, even though they've bolstered their talent, that no one knows better than you that cohesion on the offensive line is absolutely paramount?
No doubt. And I think that is a very interesting parallel. And now they've got those 3 veterans at center, right guard, and right tackle, like you talk about. And then they have a rookie, Cordell Volson, 4th-round pick at left guard. So 80% of their offensive line, 4 out of 5 guys, are new starters compared to the offensive line that performed last year. Well, the only holdover is Jonah Williams. And there's no doubt in my mind that I think both offensive lines might even be playing better in the second half than they are in the first half of the opener. You know, you do need some repetition, even though you've got guys that in the Bengals case, for instance, they've got those 3 veteran guys you mentioned in free agency, Karras, Kapp, and Collins, have 236 NFL games under their belt, 174 starts. Ted Karras won 2 Super Bowls with the New England Patriots. Kappa won 1 with Tampa Bay, the common denominator being Tom Brady, obviously. But so they know what it's supposed to look like, and they can. I don't think they're going to be fooled. And the veterans with Pittsburgh, same way. It's like, we've seen all this. Now, you know, it might be we communicate in a different language, but it's recognition, it's communication, and make sure you're on the right page with in terms of the language so you can communicate up and down the line of scrimmage. But then it's like, all right, I want to see a tackle end twist with a linebacker blitzing off the edge live and see how deep my tackle sets. And I might need to make a little adjustment there so I don't provide a lane for penetration that's going to cause those problems. All those little refinements, all those little things that, you know, have 5 playing as 1, you can't take for granted. Now, the fact that they're veteran guys and they have been exposed to the National Football League, the speed of the game, the talent level, and all those sort of things are tremendous pluses. But just like anything, repetition breeds comfort level. You know, a teacher is better in his 5th year than he is his 1st year. A lawyer is the same way, same with offensive line working together. So the fact that they haven't done anything live, even a preseason game, they did have 2 very good practices, though, against the L.A. Rams that were very, very physical and good tempo. And so they did start to establish a rhythm there. I think that was their best work of the entire preseason.
By the way, since you mentioned that and watching the Rams last night, what precipitated that helmet swinging incident by Aaron Donald? And it was interesting that nothing came of that. The Rams said, we'll handle it internally, and everybody here in Pittsburgh and around the league remembers Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph. What started all that? And, I mean, was Donald the only guilty party there?
Yeah, there was a brawl. I mean, the number ones were going against the number ones, twos were going against twos on separate football fields. And LC, Lyle Collins, was getting after it with Floyd, their edge rush guy. They had a couple of skirmishes get broken off. The second one gets broken off. Third one turns into a Donnybrook. I mean, it's really a big skirmish. And everybody starts, you know, into the fray. And it's a scenario that could have gotten out of control. And that's when Aaron Donald grabbed the helmet off of a Bengal player and smashed Cordell Volson, the rookie lineman, in the head. Fortunately, he had his helmet on. But I saw a photograph of the actual contact of the helmet-to-helmet, and the compression of the hit was amazing. And, yeah, it was not a good look for Aaron Donald. He swung that thing about 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And the league said, you know, look, you people decided to do this on your own. You guys handle it. So the Rams say they're going to handle it internally. So I'm not sure much was done at all except bad boy, no more.
Let me talk about the defense here. People are well aware as a trio, it's the best wide receiving core in the NFL. Everybody understands that Joe Burrow is just a superstar in the making if he's not already. Joe Mixon has to be reckoned with, the improvement on the offensive line. But as you pointed out, I think in a germane fashion, that the defense was significantly better by bringing in players. One of those players you lost, and he ends up in Pittsburgh, I happen to think Larry Ogunjobi is a terrific football player. I thought so when he was with Cleveland. I thought he was a significant part of the Bengals front last year. How have they replaced him? And do they think they're at least as good defensively as they were last year?
I agree with you about Larry Ogunjobi. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. And he's almost completed the entire circuit of the AFC North. He just has to go to Baltimore now.
Yeah.
He's been to three out of the four stops. And he is a disruptive force. I mean, when he lines up in that three technique, he is a penetrator. I mean, he's a guy that inverts the line of scrimmage in the running game and the passing game. He's got tremendous first-step quickness. He's got excellent hands. I think he's a hell of a player. He had 7 sacks for the Bengals. And when you have 7 sacks for an interior pass rusher that's collapsed in the pocket, that's significant. So I think that, he's definitely a force. There's no doubt. And Cordell Volson, as a rookie, maybe having Cameron Haywood to have to block some, and then Larry Ogunjobi and Alu, depending on where he lines up in the one technique. I mean, that's a long day at the office. That's a good day's work for a first start for an NFL rookie player. So that was going to be an interesting thing to watch. And in terms of replacing him, B.J. Hill, they've gotten a trade from the Giants for Billy Price, and it worked out in the Bengals' favor. B.J. Hill got a contract extension for quite a few bucks, and Billy Price is no longer a Giant. I don't think he's in the league at all. So they got him as an interior defensive tackle, three-technique guy, and they drafted Zach Carter out of Florida in the third round, who's kind of an Ogunjobi type. You know, he's a big guy that has excellent first-step quickness and tremendous get-off and can penetrate and disrupt. So that's the way they're trying to handle that on a rotational basis.
Last thing for you, Dave, and it's kind of an aesthetic question. I guess I apologize for in advance, but I find it interesting. I went to college at Miami of Ohio, so I mean I'm familiar with Cincinnati and you know what it's like down there. I'm sure Miami's not proud of that, but I am anyway, that I actually got a degree from there. But in any event, for so many, many, many years, I mean, the Reds have been the kingpins there in terms of attention. And the Bengals, of course, at times. But the stories about the Bungles and the Escaloozer outside the stadium and all that kind of stuff. Coming off a Super Bowl, do you detect a different sense of community in the community about rallying behind the Bengals now that they have emerged as one of the best teams in the NFL?
Yeah, I think the Reds are struggling and the Bengals are at the top, in terms of AFC champion in the fans' opinions. But honestly, like you say, Stan, it's a baseball town. I mean, it's one of the original franchises, and Cincinnati baseball is historic and iconic and will never be, you know, replaced as such. But it was the third trip to the Super Bowl for the Bengals, and I think this one excited the fan base the most because, like we talked about earlier, a 6-25-1 record for a couple of seasons. They came out of nowhere. It was like, why not us? And it ended up being them, and they went all the way to the Super Bowl and couldn't quite get it done. And it kind of captured the imagination of not only Cincinnati, the tri-state area, and nationally. I mean, they've picked up a lot of fans nationally on their social media stuff. And the Super Bowl, man, I bet it was 3-1 Bengal fans to Rams fans, and it was their home stadium outside. I mean, you know, the seats were assigned. Each team got their amount of seats to sell. But out in the streets, and the fans were, you know, kind of getting around the stadium to hear it as well as watch it. It was Bengal fans were everywhere. So, yeah, it's going to be the largest crowd they've ever had. Last year's playoff game against the Raiders was the largest crowd. This one is going to exceed that.
No.
And finally, they won't be scalping tickets to Steelers fans. It'll be a Bengal crowd. It'll be good to see.
Our thanks to Dave Lapham of the Cincinnati Bengals Radio Network as the Steelers get set for the, as they used to say in the olden days, the lid lifter on the 2022 season. Hope you enjoy the Savrin on Steelers podcast. A couple of things to keep in mind. You found it, and that's where you will find it, at Steelers.com. And again, if you do like the content that we provide, please let your friends know and give them a shout. Let them know that they can listen to Steelers-only content right here from the heart of the Steelers Radio Network. A reminder that I have a show each weekday afternoon on ESPN Pittsburgh. That's 970 AM or on your iHeartMedia app. Easily to get. We're there every day from noon until 2, talking a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers football. And don't forget, after the game is over, as you listen on the Steelers Radio Network, Charlie Batch, the former Steeler quarterback, and I team up to bring you some, we think, really solid post-game coverage. And, of course, that includes you with your phone calls. So we'll look forward to talking to you this Sunday after the Steelers play the Cincinnati Bengals. We do 2 podcasts per week. Thanks for joining us on Savrin on Steelers.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So, Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.